This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, you're listening to The Morning Run with Lin Mark, Kusu Chuang and Wong Xiaoning. It is a Thursday, the 20th of June. And Chuang, this is the first day of the week that you're in the studios with us. How does it feel to be back?
It feels terrible.
Why terrible?
Because Monday is like Thursday. Thursday's not like Monday. And you kind of get quite confused in between.
Yeah, I think this is why I also don't like holidays midweek. Because it kind of throws you off a little, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. And then suddenly Sunday arrives and then you're like, oh, I've got to wake up for work. And then, oh no, it's Monday. It's not Sunday.
I have no words for you, John.
Xiaoning would prefer that we have all the holidays all the time.
Yes. Why would you want to? I mean, why are you complaining?
Exactly. But it is what it is, as they say in the UK, so...
Yep, and we do have 2 days until the weekend. So in the meantime, we're going to be talking to you about lots of fascinating things. And what kind of stuff do we have on the agenda for today?
Well, I talk about how some parents have this disdain for vaccinations. And there's a story in the BBC about how this disdain for vaccinations is a bit of a global crisis. Not wanting to mince our words in any way, shape or form.
Just a bit of a global crisis.
Yes, just a bit of a, storm in the teacup.
And then the World Bank tells us that, you know, preschool is more than just ABCs 1, 2, 3, apparently. And, you know, that your whole future can be determined by your kindergarten.
So if you want to weigh in on the conversation, you can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Up next, we're going to be talking about the future of clothes. So be sure to let us know what you think. But first, Give Peace a Chance by John Lennon, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, you're listening to The Morning Run with Lin, Chuang and Xiaoning. Now, one of the greatest inventions, arguably, of the 20th century is the washing machine, and it freed a whole segment of the population from the need to be constantly bent over a washing tub. But the conversation has since shifted, and we're talking a lot more about fast fashion and the environmental impact of the clothes that we wear. And this article in The Guardian proposes that the future of clothes could in fact be ones that don't need to be washed. Now, there are companies, of course, that now exist. So eco-fashion companies like, for example, this one called Pangaea, that dangles this dream of clothes that don't need to be washed in the form of a seaweed t-shirt treated with peppermint oil that is supposed to maintain its natural freshness for longer. And I think this is a fantastic idea, partly because I hate doing laundry.
Yeah, I mean, I can't think of a fate worse than death other than hanging up clothes, right? Because after you do your laundry, you got to hang them up.
Yep, exactly.
And it's laborious, man. It's a bit like childbirth, actually. It's really painful.
How would you No, John.
TV, seriously. Discovery Channel.
Discovery Channel.
But I love this invention. I really do. And I think Pangaea stands for Earth, right?
Something like that. Yeah.
What
yeah.
is wrong with you all, guys? What's wrong with doing a bit of laundry? It's not like the end of the world.
So says the woman who doesn't wear your jeans for 2 weeks.
Okay, I confess.
Doesn't wash.
I don't wash my jeans when I'm on holiday and I can like take it for like about 2 weeks. But I do eventually wash it, okay?
Yes, just like we jeans, eventually do our laundry. Jeans we just not don't bad. Like it.
Jeans not so bad. According to the story, right, in 1966, only 5% of Germans changed their underwear on a daily basis. In 1986, that number improved to 45%.
That it's 45%.
So there's a very high chance the Germans, you're talking to in the meeting, might have a bit of like a bit of a starchy goony goo goo situation in the nether regions. Don't want you to detract from the story, but
I don't even know where to go from there, Chuang.
No, but do you really need these like companies to come up with new gimmicks once again to sell things to y'all to avoid doing laundry? How painful is laundry? Honestly, it's not that difficult.
But hang on, if you take it from the other direction, right? Because one of the startups in question that has come up with this clothes that don't need to be washed, its founder actually did a stint in Unilever, and he was doing marketing for a detergent company, and he found that actually it's part of their marketing gimmick to be encouraging people to be washing clothes all the time because they want to sell more soap.
It's good for the earth. It's good for climate change, okay? And it's also good for households because it's a four-step process, right? You've got to collect the laundry, you've got to stick it in the machine, you've got to wash it, you've got to hang it, then you've got to fold the damn thing or iron it. So there's a five-step process.
It's not that painful. And I mean, I agree with you guys. I mean, it's not the most fun thing in the world to do, but it doesn't take hours and hours, right? It can be done very quickly. And this thing about, like, you don't want to wash, or like where the laundry the company say, oh, you must wash every day. Come on, we can just use our common sense, right? Do the smell and icky test, okay?
What is the smell and icky test?
Take a smell. And if it doesn't smell so good or if it feels a bit grimy, well, it's time to wash it then. It's as simple as that. It doesn't have to be done every day.
So would you, Wong Xiaoning, buy a an undergarment or a set of undergarments that don't have to be washed?
No, because in this article, right, it says that some of the stuff doesn't need to be washed for 100 days. Now, that will confuse me because I need to remember when the 100 days started.
A quarter, like, you financial people know all this, right?
Yeah. Yes. Oh, there's just too many things to remember. So I've got to start like a little calendar. One garment, day one. And so, then 100 days later, wash it.
So he's saying, Xiaoning, that you can remember the financial years of different companies off the top of your head, but you wouldn't be able to keep track of your laundry
which is why
cycle?
You just wash it every day. Then you don't have to worry about it.
I think it's a fantastic invention. And I think it was like, have you guys read Jack Reacher? You know the Jack Reacher stories?
Mm-hmm.
So Jack Reacher is the protagonist, right? He has a habit of traveling around. He's an itinerant. He goes from town to town. He doesn't stick around.
This is the Tom Cruise movie.
Tom Cruise. Except that Tom Cruise is only 5'7", and in the story, Jack Reacher is 6'5". But that doesn't matter, right?
Movie magic.
Jack Reacher only goes around with two t-shirts. And every time the t-shirt wears out or gets holy or icky and smelly, he changes it. Simple. So he is tailor-made for this invention.
I think you actually brought up a very interesting point earlier, Chuang, which is that there is an environmental element to this story as well, right? Because, for example, the Pangaea shirt, it purports to save up to 3,000 litres of water in its lifetime. Because half of the environmental impact of clothes tends to come from the washing cycle because of the water you use and the detergent that you eventually release into the system as a result of it. So that is one of the things that we are discussing a lot more when it comes to fast fashion, as well as the greenhouse gases that it creates. So I am in favor of these clothes that don't need to be washed so often as well for that. It's not just that I don't like to do laundry. So, you know, you can also save the world a little bit on your own
time. Do you know that this t-shirt costs $85, guys?
Okay, but that price point will come down over time because of economies of scale, right?
And also, you don't need to wash it so often, so you can wear it every day.
How about they invent a set of undergarments that decompose over time? So when they start disappearing off your nether regions, it's time to change.
All right, you know what? Let us know what you think. Would you wear these clothes that don't need to be washed? You can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. We've got a couple of messages for you and then more fascinating discussions. So be sure to stay tuned. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9. That was The First Cut is the Deepest by Sheryl Crow. And you're listening to The Morning Run with Lin Chuang and Xiaoning. Now, the World Health Organization has listed vaccine hesitancy as one of the top 10 threats to global health this year, and London-based biomedical research charity The Wellcome Trust conducted a survey with responses from more than 140,000 people in over 140 countries, and they asked two things: if vaccines were safe, and if the respondents believed that vaccines worked. And the shocking thing was that between 17% and 20% of respondents believed that either disagreed that vaccine was safe or hesitated over had no response, and about 20% also somewhat disagreed with the fact that vaccines actually work. And I guess this really illustrated the rise in vaccine refusals and people actually hesitating over whether or not they should vaccinate their kids. And it's a very alarming trend when you consider how many measles outbreaks, for example, we've had around the world and even here in Malaysia, in Kuala Lumpur. This is something that could have easily been avoided because the MMR vaccine was created in the 60s and it's widely available now across the world.
Yeah, now that we're having discovered that the Kuala Lumpur deaths was in fact due to a measles outbreak. I'm a parent, and when my children are born, I was actually quite alarmed at how many vaccinations they had to go through, especially when you're such a small infant, at least 3 or 4, and officially endorsed by the government. But I understand, because among my peers, there was a lot of parents who were very, very much into the anti-vaccination movement. And a lot lot of them, a lot of their trepidation was centered on the fact that vaccinations, the whole act is very close to the pharmaceutical companies.
Mm.
They were very suspicious about the componentry or the formulation of the vaccines itself. So then there's another body of people who felt that if you breastfeed, then there's a natural component to your immune system. So you don't have to artificially inflate it with vaccinations. So that was, I think, the core reasons behind them not wanting to vaccinate the children.
This movement has become even like louder in the last few years, right? I think that's a lot to do with social media, because from what I gather and from the articles I've read, it's a lot of these mothers or parents, because you've got all these forums online, right?
Yep.
And they exchange all these ideas about all these issues with regards to the vaccines. Like some of them apparently lead to ADD,
yeah.
And that, you know, arguments that your child should come up with its own natural immunity. You shouldn't need vaccines. But it's like, in a way, aren't they all just echo in their own little echo chamber? Because they listen to what they want to hear, right, from each other.
To a certain extent, we all live in echo chambers, right? But I think the most dangerous thing about a lot of the discussions in the anti-vax movement is that they are disregarding wide bodies of scientific research in favor of cherry-picking a few surveys or a few research studies that support the idea that, for example, vaccines have been linked to autism. And these are things that have been disproven by the wider scientific community. And yet, somehow, that the fact that it has been debunked hasn't really filtered into the anti-vax community, because it's rooted in mistrust. They don't trust, as you mentioned, Chuang, pharmaceutical companies, big pharma, the government, scientific institutions.
The problem with all this is because we don't know where the truth lies. Yeah. So this survey was actually written up in the BBC. So I did some checking. So this survey was actually endorsed by the Wellcome Group.
Mm-hmm.
So Wellcome with two L's. So it turns out the Wellcome is a biomedical research charity, and they got £26 billion in an investment portfolio, which then funds their work through, I guess, the dividends or whatever. Where did they come across £26 billion? Who is funding these people? So this is obviously a pro-vaccination study, yeah, written by a biomedical research charity with £26 billion in an investment portfolio. Where does this money come from? So you see, I completely understand the two bodies of the two schools of thought, because we don't really know definitively whether vaccinations are good for you. I mean, I've done the vaccinations for my children, but I don't really know for sure 100% where the truth really lies.
So why then did you decide to vaccinate your kids, Chuang? Was it kind of just a balance of probabilities
sort
of situation?
Yeah, on the balance of probabilities, probably better for them than probably not, you know, yeah.
I mean, another school of thought with regards to vaccination is that if you don't do it, are you then harming the wider community?
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, you're introducing these diseases to, like, if your kids go to preschool or kindergarten, and you're bringing these, diseases into the school. And there's repercussions for everybody if you don't vaccinate.
That's true.
So, there is a sense of, like, you must, in a way, you're encouraged to do that for the better of community, isn't it?
Yeah,
but when you're a parent, you think about you think about the family collective rather than the wider community. You think about whether it's good for the children or not. I don't think that whole issue about spreading is so prevalent among children, among parents.
I think there is, but there is definitely the concern that this is why that I think our health ministry has been mulling over the idea of compulsory vaccinations, because herd immunity is the other benefit of having a wide segment of the population immunized against certain diseases. For example, if you have a child that is immunocompromised and cannot be vaccinated because they have leukemia, for example, or some other compromising disease, then they are relying on the fact that the wider community has been immunized against measles, against polio, against diphtheria, in order for them not to get the disease. So it's not just the fact that, you know, that I do agree that in a lot of cases, we do tend to focus more on our family unit than on the repercussions towards the community. But these are life and death situations for some children. So there has to be this has to be a factor that you take into consideration if you consider whether to avoid vaccinating your children, that you could cause the death of someone else's child if you introduce a disease like this into a school, into a preschool.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I put my kids through the whole routine, and I remember the time, you know, some of these needles can be quite daunting, you know, and they're like infant children, like, you know, just newly born. But I don't know. I think nobody really knows the full extent of what's involved, you know.
I think what's a shame is that some diseases were almost eradicated, like polio and smallpox. And I mean, even measles was very, very rare, very rare. But now it's back again because some of these anti-vacciners don't want to go through this.
Yeah, the most dangerous is when there's a community, like say the community refuses vaccines on the basis of religion or cultural reasons, for example. So that entire community then is at risk. I mean, I think there are statistics that in the US, before the MMR vaccine became widespread, measles killed 400 to 500 people a year, and it infected about 2 to 3 million. And then after,
and measles is actually quite it's fatal, right? Obviously.
It can be fatal.
It can be for some people.
And then after the MMR vaccine came in, you only saw about 100 cases a year. But then now that trend is rising once again. Well, let us know what you think. You can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. We're going to come up to the 6:30 news in just a little while, and to take you there is The Wallflowers with One Headlight, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9. That was The Tide Is High by Blondie, and you're listening to The Morning Run with Lin Mark, Kusu Chuang and Wong Xiaoning. Now, education here in Malaysia, our kids study for an average of 12.2 years, but apparently that education is only worth just over 9 years of schooling when compared to developed countries like South Korea or Singapore. And this is according to a World Bank study. And the problem that they've highlighted here is particularly an inconsistency in our preschools, because they've in this World Bank study, they found that when children actually start Standard 1 at age 7, the quality of education is already unequal. So then they have different starting points already at the start of the primary school level.
Yeah, I tend to agree. And I don't know much about it, but isn't preschool unregulated? So in the sense that you can choose not to send your kids to preschool. And then even the quality of different institutions, preschool institutions, differ greatly depending on your neighborhood, depending on the size of your wallet, depending on what language you speak, etc.
Yes, yeah? It is.
It is, right?
Yeah, it's not compulsory. Only primary school is compulsory, if I'm not wrong. Yeah, as a result, there's probably like a wide range of choices and standards, right? But do you think that parents, I mean, this study means that, does it really, really make a difference? Because if I can draw parallels with myself, when I went to primary one, I could barely read, but hey, I survived.
Yeah, no.
So I wonder, is there too much emphasis on being able to read by the time you go to primary one? I mean, it's, in a way, preschool is supposed to be a nurturing part of your childhood, right? You're supposed to enjoy it. Maybe you learn a little bit of ABC, 1, 2, 3, but is there too much focus on like an academic outcome from it?
Yeah, I think the fact that someone like you turned out all right is because you've come from a kind of middle class situation, and you know, from 0 to 7 years old, there's a lot of learning that happens at the children
in the house, right?
Yeah. In terms of the language you speak, in terms of the subject matter, in terms of the people that your parents interact with, in terms of your social strata. I think all that is quite subtle, but all of us come from middle class upbringings, right? And I'd venture to say that it's a very different 0 to 7 situation from, say, a rural 0 to 7, right? And so if a rural child would come in at age 7 versus an urban middle class 7 years old, it's very different in terms of how developed the child is.
And then depending on where they go to school, once they start primary school, then that can either make it that can either give them the education that they've missed out on in those first 7 years, or it can just worsen the entire situation. Because, for example, if you're going to a very rural school where perhaps you've got 2 teachers to administer to 200 students, then that child is not going to get the attention that they need in order to properly bring them up to par with students who have had more advantages and are going to a school where they get more attention from the teachers, more face time, and just generally it's not going to, I think our education system is not quite yet at the point where we can actually close that gap during those first primary years, and I think those are really the most crucial when it comes to bringing kids up to the same standard.
Yeah, I've done a bit of reading on this, specifically Malcolm Gladwell, right, and says that why are you all giving me funny stares?
Very atas lah, Malcolm Gladwell, but never
really?
Mind.
No. Okay, so it's all about the kiasuness of the parent, right? It's about how tiger your parent is, right? So the more tiger the parent is, the more activities that they put their children through. So like holidays, for example, if you're not a tiger parent, you don't let your children do anything lah. But if you're very kiasu, they do all kinds of things, right? They go to ballet school, They want to pottery, swimming, piano, violin, whatever, yeah. right? They want to learn sports and all that. And the days are just packed in the children's holiday. So even during the off times, the child is developing. And there's a real and meaningful result at the end of it when the child comes out at 21 years old. That child or that adult is so much more capable to deal with the real world mm-hmm. than, say, a 21-year-old who does not.
Yeah, no? I think, yeah.
Yes, and it's true. I mean, your parents, of course, play such a big yeah. role, right? Your household, and that also means your household income because you need to
right.
have, you need, I mean, all these things cost money. They're not
absolutely.
Necessarily free.
Absolutely. Exactly.
Which is why Lynn's point about the primary school education is so important. Because that's when everybody else is like, we're all tested on the same level.
And yeah, you come out at the same level, 0 to 7, and then you're given a head start by the parent because of where your parent's situation is from a affluence perspective.
For sure, but at primary school is where they should try and even out the levels or at least mm-hmm. notice the kids who are behind. Right, because the problem in Malaysia is that every year, at the end of every primary school year, you just automatically go up to the next standard, regardless of whether the child should or should not. There doesn't seem to be any testing, and nobody catching
and all
those that left behind.
And remove examinations as well, right?
Yes.
But I think that's also to do with the teaching system and the teachers themselves. Because, you know, it's one thing to say that, you know, the government must catch this kind of thing. It is down to the teachers who deal with these kids on a daily basis. And the sad fact of it is a lot of teachers are underpaid and overworked, in addition to managing multiple classes of 50 students for several hours a day. They are saddled with administrative work, so they will not be able to really dedicate their full attention to these children who really are where their focus should be, because we don't treat our teachers the way they should be treated. You know, we say that teaching is a noble profession, but at the end of the day, if our teachers can't afford to put food on the table, then they are not going to feel that it's a noble profession. They're just going to feel tired and exhausted, and that is going to translate into how they teach these children.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, we really need to relook at the education system holistically.
Yeah, so is the man the right man for the job? Sensitive question, but apt, right? Because, I mean, this is completely germane to the economy. If we put out substandard people, you're going to have a substandard economy and you're going to be stuck in the middle income trap for the rest of our lives, right?
Yes. Unfortunately.
And on that positive note, you can let us know what you think. Are our preschool standards having a knock-on effect on the education of our kids? You can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. We've got a couple of messages coming up after this and then more discussions for you, so be sure to keep it here on The Morning Run, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was The Next Time Around by Little Joy, and you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn Chang. Well, excuse me, I nearly called you Julian there for Chuang.
Different Chinaman.
Yes, entirely. So, Lynn, you're here with Lynn Chuang and Xiao Ning. Thank you for all your messages this morning. We've had a lot of interesting discussions. We've talked about the future of clothes. We've talked about vaccine hesitancy, as well as whether preschools have a direct impact on our kids' educations. Now, we've got a couple of messages from you guys over the course of this morning. So, what do we have, Xiao Ning?
Well, we have... Da Vadai, sorry, I hope I pronounced your name correctly.
Vadai.
He said seaweed underwear sounds like an eco-friendly fashion shift. When it disintegrates, it's time to change.
And MJ talks about how anti-vaxxers are extremely selfish. In a disaster movie, they'd be the first ones to grab a lifeboat, ignore everyone else, and then get eaten by a shark. Love that.
Yeah, I don't know. I just generally... I think it is very much what you said, Chuang. It's that the focus is here on the family unit. You know, it's difficult to look past that sometimes to see the wider impact on the community. But it has to be considered, especially when it comes to the health and safety of children in general.
Since when have Malaysians been aware of the chain of causation, right? Ever, right? Right? Some of the stuff they do and say, or we do and say, has got completely no regard for the wider community, ever, right?
Well,
and
I mean,
look at the way we pollute our country. We just chuck stuff out the car window and we don't care.
Exactly. Actually, when you see the amount of trash on the road, it's horrific.
It's horrendous.
Yeah, and the way that people park very haphazardly.
Yeah, they don't care about what happens as a result.
And the irony of seeing a lot of trash on the road is that we are, I think everyone at least has an opinion on what should be done with the waste that's been illegally imported into the country, but we have no regard for the actual waste that we generate ourselves.
Yeah, absolutely.
But I think the trend is changing. I feel like people are becoming more aware, partly as a result of all the conversations about sustainability and environmental awareness. awareness, as well as just conversations like these about vaccines, right? So I feel like I'm optimistic. Maybe you're not.
Have you ever sat in on a conversation among a bunch of gap-tooth septuagenarians in a coffee shop and listened to the subject matter being discussed? It is very, very far from what is discussed on BFM, right? I'm serious, right?
It's true. We do live in a little echo chamber.
Yes, we do. This is the 5%, right, essentially.
But then, we also, these are septuagenarians sitting in a coffee shop. You do have the younger generation up and coming as well and moving into the labour market. So perhaps they will bring a change of their own.
Hope springs eternal. It does.
It does. I think, I don't know, as young people move in, I do sense this, a little bit more of a community spirit nowadays.
Now, Hannah says parents need to interact with their kids more to help them develop, but it's difficult if you work 3 or 4 jobs between 2 people. Yeah, I think there's been some research to show that, for example, reading to your kids is beneficial for their eventual development, mental development. But where do you find the time? I mean, if you go to, if you look at B40 families, for example, if they are forced to work multiple jobs in order to put food on the table, then interaction, meaningful interaction with the children is going to fall by the wayside because your priority is going to be feeding them, right?
Yeah, so circumstances already militate against the child's development, and then the education system doesn't lend itself to the situation either. So, on all counts, the gap between the haves and the have-nots get wider and wider every year. It is already so difficult to catapult yourself into the higher regions. This is just going to get worse.
All right. Thank you so much for your messages this morning. We're coming up on the 7 o'clock news with Keith Kum poised at the mic. And to take you there is Coldplay with High Speed, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.